Today I'm having a conversation with Robin Reynolds, who is the founder of Ink and Alchemy, and she is an artist, a poet, and she has another job too.
Welcome to Conversations, episode 6.
My name is Amy Adams. I'm the editor of Conscious Life Space and the broadcaster of this podcast.
Today's episode features Robin Reynolds of Ink and Alchemy. She's an artist, a poet, and an engineer and manager. A series of traumas led her to visual arts journaling and slam poetry. In today's episode, we discuss the value of art, healing and transformation, memory, creation, slam poetry, and healing art journals.
Welcome, Robin, to Conversations.
Thank you.
So, actually, I wanted to ask you about your other work. So, you do some kind of like engineering or something?
I'm actually a manager now, but yes. And that whole thing is sort of part of my journey toward, healing and kind of coming into myself. I grew up in Ohio. I was born in Ohio, very much, stay at home mom kind of little small town that I was in. And I never really thought I would go to college at all. So through a series of things that happened when I was 34, so I already had kids, married, really feeling very frustrated with my life. Uh-huh. I could feel a pull toward creative things, which really wasn't appreciated either in that situation that I was in. It seemed frivolous, I think. It's a very practical kind of community that I lived in.
Uh-huh.
So to be honest with you, I ended up getting a divorce. And then my sister committed suicide really within, I think, the same week. It's a blur. But I just decided to leave to go find, I figured my life is a mess as it is, so anything would be better. So I took the kids, they were 10 and 12 at the time, and I moved to Albuquerque, which is, in retrospect, an interesting move. But I think I did it out of desperation. And the reason I did it is I applied to colleges all over the country, and I got into the University of New Mexico.
Ah.
So I started a chemistry degree, which truly was crazy, crazy for me. And so I did that. I took a long time, 6 years really, to work through that while I was working. And then I got an engineering degree. So it's sort of been part of my transformation to realize that I can do anything I want, really. And it's been a real surprise to see where I ended up. So.
Wow. So I didn't realize it was chemistry. I knew there was, I had some vague idea about like engineering,
yeah.
But I didn't really know there was chemistry too. So actually though, like, did you always have an interest in the sciences?
I mean, no.
Okay, so that's really something I'm curious about too.
Yes.
I mean, why choose chemistry?
Well, actually, I'm going to reveal something about myself right now. I was in a very bad place. Just everything in my life was torn asunder in one fell swoop. And so actually I drank an entire bottle of wine. This was in 2003. So I did have internet, but I think it was, I don't know, maybe still dial up. I didn't even know how to use it very well. And I just kind of started Googling who makes the most money. Because I thought if I'm going to do this wild, crazy thing, I realized a lot of people go to college. It didn't seem attainable to me. And I thought I might as well just shoot for the moon and I better make some money while I'm doing it. So chemical engineering is actually the program that I started in. At the time, it was listed on Forbes as one of the highest paying jobs. So along the way, I started working at a laboratory here in Albuquerque and really was doing more basic chemistry. Mm-hmm. So I switched to chemistry. And then I got a master's in nanoscience and microsystems engineering. So wow. I still work at that same laboratory. I've been there now for since 2003, kind of worked my way through really just a student, a technologist, a staff member, and now a manager.
Wow. That's so great. So do people at work know that you're a poet and that you make art?
I think some do. Yeah, I don't really hide it. But then again, work is so busy. It's not something that comes up.
Right.
It definitely seems like two different pieces of my life. And in answer to your question, I was always more of a reader. I never considered myself artistic, mm-hmm. Especially as far as visual art, which I find interesting now, because it really has been, I think, the framework upon which I built how I changed my life and how I healed myself along the way. And I didn't know that. I just kind of started doing it almost secretly, if that makes sense. I was almost embarrassed of it because I thought, I'm no good at this. Why would I do this? It's not practical. It's not serving any purpose in my life, because I was still stuck in the old mindset. And I just kept it up. I've been doing art for years now. And it's for me. I do sell some art. I've been in some shows, but it's about the process and it's about working through things in my mind. And I think without that art and the writing all this way, I don't think I would have been able to do the transformation that I've done.
You know, it's kind of interesting though, because you referred a couple of times to kind of like you were brought up in this kind of like practical world, you know? Yeah. And my parents too, they encouraged art, but not as a living. So that was not really, oh, isn't that nice? You can do that. But, you know, when you want to go to school for it or something, they were like, So, or maybe if you wanted to become a teacher or something where you could have like a practical application to go to kids or something. But for me, that was something that I completely never wanted to do. That just didn't, that wasn't a thing. Do you think that the value of art is not really, what's the word?
Quantifiable, maybe?
Yeah, like it doesn't really, I mean, I think, I mean, at least in my own personal experience, and even still, this has been a huge struggle for me, is that, I mean, I was told at one point when I was working as doing art full time that I don't work. By someone, even though I was making money, but I mean, I wasn't living the life that they were.
Right. So. So I think the value of art is underestimated all the time. And, you know, why? I don't know. I can say, you know, where I came from, and maybe it's different now. I have not been back to that small town in Ohio in 15 years. But they're really, they just, I don't think they're exposed to it maybe as much as we are, those of us who seek it out now. And, you know, I fill my life, my personal life, certainly with creative people, creative things. And so you really start to understand the value of it. There is a dollars and cents part to it. I think people who make their living in art, I really respect them even more than someone who goes to a corporation and gets a steady paycheck, because you have to work your ass off to get something built and established and maintained, and you're constantly having to push. I've seen people do it. It's hard, right? And so to me, I respect that just a little bit more, because you're not walking into an already created system and just being a cog in the whole system, but you are creating that whole brand new thing. That in itself is kind of an act of creation, right? And you're doing it against all odds, because the world doesn't appreciate art sometimes. So I think that actually, if I had this to do over again, I may have gone more, I might have tried to do a business more around art. Really, it's not art. It's healing and transformation that I'm so interested in.
Yeah, I know. Art is a kind of vague term, but
yeah. I think most people, I think when you talk about art and all these creative endeavors, you're really looking at how do you understand your life and transform it, or how do you interpret the world and use art to do that. So I think it's easier sometimes, like what I did. It wasn't easy, but it was more, I knew what to expect. I could see other people making money that way. And I did that. To be honest with you, I never did think, I wasn't a scientist at heart. I see people at work that just live and breathe that, right? I can do it, but I'm actually a lot more on the creative and conceptual side than people who get down in the weeds on precise numbers and calculations, which I think makes me a little bit different, a little bit more agile, I believe, in the discipline that I work in. But at the same time, I don't know if I'm really happy. This isn't my life's dream to be a scientist or a manager or anything else. I'd rather be doing art and making money for that. And if I had realized that at the beginning, I think I would have done that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So how did you even like come into it though? Like, what was the thing that got you into journaling specifically? I know there's a lot of like scrapbooking and different things, but journaling is a little bit different, and because you're kind of creating and you're going on themes. And what was your first like exposure to that?
So I think as part of, I've always been a bit of a writer, never consistently wrote in a journal. And the journals that I do now, as I am sure you realize, they're not really just a written journal. They're more of a visual journal, right? But they include words in there. When I first was kind of moving from Ohio to Albuquerque, I was writing when I could, not regularly. And I think that just morphed into these more visual journals. Those are the things that I was kind of hiding, doing in the closet. Because they're kind of grungy and they're not beautiful in many cases. And there is no practical purpose for them. You know, what are you going to do with this book of, you know, it's if you just are just looking at dollars and cents or can you sell your work or whatever, there is no practical purpose. So I had to get over that barrier. And I think it's just developed over the years. I can't actually remember the first time I really started doing it, and I can't remember the first time I actually acknowledged that I thought it was a valuable thing in my life. It just evolved into that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So did you actually, when you were writing, did you keep all your journals through the years of your writings, or do you kind of toss some things away and like edit them later?
I wish I had kept them throughout the years. I am terrible about keeping things. I'm sort of almost a minimalist. And so I've gotten rid of a lot of things that now at this age, 48, I kind of wish I had kept, just so that I could go back and remember, because memory is such a failing thing, right? It's just changeable. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on some activities right now to really look back at my past. Mm-hmm. I think for the longest time, the way that I dealt with some of that was just to shut it off, walk away from it, and create something new in my life, which mm-hmm. is a valid approach. And I don't want to wallow in the past, but I want to go back a little bit and look at it and really understand, what was it? Was that true? Or is that a memory that I sort of twisted to my own uses? We do that, right?
Yeah.
It would help a lot if I had these journals, but I do not for the most part. Mm-hmm. And even the ones that I make today, often I'll write, but then I'll do art or something over them. And to me, that process seems like sort of acknowledging that that piece is over.
Uh-huh.
That nothing's ever around for me to sort of reference or look at. Maybe that's good. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I try to live in the present. So
yeah. When you're healing though, too, like an old issue, sometimes taking whole blocks of time and tried to heal something. And
yes.
And then a few years later though, all of a sudden, you know, that I'm better than I was before, but all of a sudden, you know, that little thought will just rear its ugly head, you know, like a little dragon.
Yes. That's exactly it, Amy. I have, so going to school and doing all that, that was kind of just a hard slog for a long time. You know, I had two kids, I had a full-time job, and I had college. And so even though within that, I know I was healing, I definitely was, but I wasn't doing it sort of strategically or consciously for the most part, because I was just too darn busy to work on that, the real like emotional landscape piece. So I think it happened as a byproduct of that. But then after I kind of got through the main part of school, and I think I started feeling a lot more confidence in the world, that's really when the journaling came into play, and I started doing that consistently. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the healing really started happening. And so now, just like you're saying, I thought I had really moved away from a lot of things, and through a convergence of factors. And it's amazing how the universe really will step up and direct you into a way or a path. Right now, in the next month, I'm going to do a lot of revisiting the past. And I think it's because it's time finally for me to take a good, strong, hard look at it directly and acknowledge what did happen, what didn't happen, what I'm done with and what I'm not done with, and then finally move on. Mm-hmm. So funny how they just keep coming back, and I think you're never done, right? Never.
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think with age, there is some beauty to it, because we do kind of realize that our time is becoming less on this earth. So we don't really get wrapped up in some of the older stuff that we thought might have been a worry in the past. At least that's my opinion. I think it's kind of like, well, at the time, it was a valid concern, mm-hmm. but now with age, it's like, well, that's really not that important. So.
I agree. Our thresholds change for sure, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they just raise to where everything underneath that threshold, it's small stuff, and why waste your time on it?
Yeah.
I don't know if everyone gets there, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but you know, when you're out in the world, there are people who are still really down in the weeds. And getting wrapped around the axle over what appears to me to be very small things that I just don't want to spend my time on.
Right.
And I try to really, you know, distance myself from that. And that's one of the lessons I've learned, which I think has served me well. I guess I felt like anyone who ever had a conversation or a concern or something they wanted to talk to me about, I sort of felt this obligation to engage with them. Mm-hmm. And the last couple of years, I've really realized I don't have to do that. I have much more important things to do mm-hmm. in my life in some situations. And there are certain things that you could talk about all day long. And if that person's never going to move forward, it's not going to do any good anyway.
Right.
So you're just throwing your time and effort and love into a black hole. And
yeah,
I don't know if I can stand that anymore because time is so precious, right?
Yeah. Well, somebody recently, I don't remember who it was. I mean, whether I read a quote or it was just somebody in a Facebook, because somebody was, kind of complaining about something, like they were very frustrated. And they said, well, just remember that wherever there is this kind of like darker or negative feeling, and simultaneously, there's the opposite side that exists, and you can kind of choose where you want to be on the spectrum there.
Yeah.
Love art. And I think that journaling is something that I've never really have done like you do. So I actually started to see you inspired me.
So,
since I kind of moved away from art, I felt like this is something good to just to kind of express myself. So I have like a tiny notebook, and I just decided that sometimes at the end of the day, I'm just going to doodle. So it could be with markers or mm-hmm. whatever. I don't care what material it is. It just, I mean, I even have like those highlighter pens, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So something like that. So I'm going to try it and see how that goes. But
by the way, my memory is awful. And I think this is an important part of my journey. I had a lot of trauma when I was young, and it took me a lot of years to figure out that my brain just blocked most of it. And in the process blocked a whole lot of other things. Mm-hmm. And so, I always have felt kind of broken in that way, that I have a terrible memory. Uh-huh. This is why I wish I had kept some of my journals. And so when I look back at the art that I've done, it really visually just, is a cue to me. And I can remember very richly and deeply what I was thinking about or what was happening. So to me, that's a huge, benefit.
Yeah.
Kind of a record of my life for me, yeah. And it really helps.
Well, yeah, memory is very tricky. I actually was married. I was in a relationship for 20 years with somebody who ultimately at one point had a brain injury. And so the whole idea of memory and then that whole thing like confabulation where we actually fill in the blanks of things that may not even be real sometimes. Right. You know, sometimes it is accurate, your memory, when you're thinking back if it gets triggered, but sometimes it could be that thing called confabulation, which I kind of is, to me, is kind of a scary thing that, you know, human beings do.
So. Right. Right. Well, my sister had an impeccable memory. She died when she was 31. And until that time, I did not realize truly how much I relied on her for, it's actually amazing. We spent so much time together. We grew up together. We had our kids together when we were younger, and we each had our own husbands, but we would during the day call each other, take the kids places. We were just together all the time. And so without realizing it, I was relying on her constant sort of stream of memories, and they would trigger mine.
Right.
Since I have lost her, I don't have that. And it's almost as if I've lost most of my memory, which has shocked me. Yeah. So I've let it go in a lot of ways. I don't know a lot of those memories. I don't know if they're even worth retrieving, but I want to make sure that in this present time I can really experience my life in a way that makes sense.
Right.
Right. And that my mental processes are more accurate. I've been thinking a lot about truth, right? Truth, memories, love, what do those things mean and how they mix together and how do we confuse them all the time? We do. Right.
Actually, in one of your poems, you actually talk about love. I don't have the quote in front of me, but that you don't, you know, we can't even really know what love is because it's changing all the time.
Yes, yes. Let's see. What is that? About love, it will change 1,000 times.
Yeah, and yes. I love that because everything is always changing and... but we're not even really aware of it because I think we're like so slow to change human beings, in my opinion.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm actually going to find the quote.
That is, that's from middle-aged white women. Yes. So,
which I love that poem, by the way, because I am a middle-aged white woman.
So. Yeah. Well, Albuquerque, as you were looking for that, Albuquerque is a very artsy kind of creative city, and I love that. It has helped me to open up myself to that and realize that it's okay to do. But honestly, especially in the performance poetry realm, you know, it tends to be younger people, people sort of on the fringe. And I felt that the middle-aged white women kind of persona, it wasn't very well represented. So that's how I started writing that.
Uh-huh.
And it's turned into something really different. So.
Yeah. So did you present that like on stage or anything? So
I've done it many times. Yeah. I haven't been doing it as much in the last couple of months, but I do slam poetry here in Albuquerque. Last summer I was actually on a team. We, traveled to Kentucky and competed in a nationwide competition. Mm. And this particular poem I've done, I would bet hundreds of times on stages at little bars and coffee shops and stuff. And almost every time someone comes up to me, usually a middle-aged white woman, and just gives me a hug and says, thanks so much. Because I think we're out there walking around and we're, you know, 45, 50 some years old, and everyone just thinks, you know, we have nothing interesting to say, which is not true. There's a whole lot of nuance and story and things going on behind these people that we've grown into, right?
Mm-hmm.
Often I think the young think they have cornered the market on, you know, excitement and emotional turmoil and all that stuff. So.
Yeah, they haven't lived yet really to know. So.
Isn't it funny? It's funny to me. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah, that's how
that's actually why I started Conscious Life Space, actually, was to kind of create a platform for to have a voice to kind of say, like, look, hey, I have lived a lot of years and I learned a lot of shit. So yeah. I know a lot of things and I can share it with you. I mean, I actually, I haven't published it yet, but I did something where I was telling younger women something very specific about women's health. And mm-hmm. I just was, you know, because I'm like, maybe somebody else isn't going to tell you. So
right.
There you go.
Yeah. Yep.
Welcome.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And that poem actually starts out, and believe me, in a room of people that came to watch performance poetry, it irritates them at the beginning. Because these are people, like I said, typically young. They don't have 401ks. They don't have degrees yet. They're still working on that stuff.
Right.
By the time they're my age, they'll likely have something like that. But they're still in that kind of rage against the man and, you know, all this. And so I start out with, you know, I have a 401k, my car is still under warranty. And so I'm trying to say, this is what you see these middle-aged women as most of the time. We have our shit together, you know, our kids are raised and all of this. But then I start going through some of the stuff that led me to that. And it gets, I think that's what I'm trying to say is we're not what you see on the surface. And we went through a whole lot of stuff to get here. And you could learn a lot from that.
Yeah. Actually, I wanted to ask you, would you actually do one of your poems, like, on this podcast?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, of course I will. Okay. Yeah, I'm happy to do it. Thank you. My shoes make a satisfying clack when I walk. My car, still under warranty. I have a 401k, and I'm not hungry right now. Okay, I'll admit it. I don't actually remember the last time I was really hungry. I'm a middle-aged white woman, and from the outside, it looks like I have my shit together, which makes me fade into the background sometimes, but that's not the whole story. I remember searching the floorboard of a Chevy Nova that hadn't run in months. I was looking for loose change so I could buy cheap beer and fuck an unemployed waiter that I didn't even like. I remember when one of my husbands got so angry that he put his fist through the kitchen window, blood dripping down and freezing into the crunching snow. I remember the day my sister took the trouble to carry an old chair down 27 stairs into her damp basement. She tied 12 knots in the cord and then she hung herself from the rafters. When I found her, her feet were pointing like a ballerina. I remember thinking I was right thousands of times, and in reality being so, so wrong. I remember getting an abortion and doing shots of Jack afterwards. I remember ripping one marriage to shreds. My point is, this life is much more complicated than you think. It's painted over thickly with gray. There is so much shattering in every life. Vessels meant to hold come crashing to the ground. Windows, not used so much for seeing out, but useful for keeping the predators at bay. They break too, the tinkling of glass, waking you in the dark of the night. So, when you encounter a chain link fence, climb. Immediately check for metal barbs and seek a soft spot for landing. Understand that dogs are lying in wait. Hungry dogs, stupid dogs, dogs that have been beaten and kicked, jowls swinging and dripping like ham hocks in a meat locker. These dogs are ticking off the seconds, watching as you work the tips of your boots into each silver diamond, sweat salty and thick, beating a line on your forehead as you navigate the loops and whirls of wire poised to slice your palms. And still, the dogs wait to lap your blood. This is what it is like to live in this world. You will struggle to your feet, weary and panting, more times than you ever thought possible. And do not think you know what love is. I swear to you, on my word, it will change 1,000 times. And so, if middle-aged white women wrote slam poetry, I think they would say, "It's rough out there. Be careful, sweet cheeks."
Bravo. I love it.
I haven't done that one in a while. So thank you for asking.
Really, thank you so much for sharing that, because that was absolutely beautiful. So
many life experiences that Robin has made herself vulnerable and shared here publicly. And so I just wanted to pause here and mention that we will be talking about suicide briefly and suicide prevention.
The team that I was on last summer, we worked a lot of events that were about suicide prevention and things of that nature and mental health issues. And so we had some other poems that we wrote, and I use that one quite a bit to start conversations.
Yeah, that's actually, when I read that, I was like, I didn't know that about you. So, it was like, whoa. Sadly to say, you're not the only person that I know who has had other family members who have committed suicide. It's actually much more common than we would like to believe. So
it really is. And I think, for me, one of the things that I am sensitive about is, I guess there's some truth to this. I'm sure there is. Often people think, assume, or say, something along the lines of, hey, people who are kind of crying out, they just want attention. They're probably not going to really do that. And, I sometimes really strongly argue back with people that have that opinion, because I don't remember ever once hearing my sister talk about it. She just did it, which is terrifying to me, that you can just not know. And I tried to work through that for many years, probably still not there. And how did I miss that? And how did I not somehow help her? Uh-huh. I knew that she struggled a little bit. I feel like I was always a lot more resilient than her. We had a lot of trauma in our lives, and I could let it roll off my back a little more than she could. I guess I didn't realize the whole time we were going through that, how much it was affecting her and that it was aggregating. Right. So, I feel pretty strongly that, when we hear someone talking about things like that, we shouldn't dismiss it. And that, really they are asking for help in most cases. They just don't know how to ask. And I've had a very close person in my life in the years since my sister's suicide, who really did come to me for help. And I have also learned that the system isn't really that helpful sometimes. When you try to get them help, it's hard. It takes a long time to get appointments. It seemed like they just want to medicate a lot without really understanding the problem.
Right.
So the system itself is not set up for success in many ways, at least in my experience.
Yeah. I actually recently interviewed a nutritionist who actually was talking about the mental health system, because nutrition can actually play like a very big role in your mental health, because the whole gut and, brain link and everything. Yeah. And she was saying, though, that some people too, that maybe they have not like kind of like a severe depression, but they're having some kind of, doctors are saying to them, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. It's just an emotional issue, like you don't really have a disease, those are fake symptoms or whatever,
right?
And they send them to a psychiatrist, but she said that even the psychiatrists, there's not enough of them, and that it's even hard to get like an appointment. And she said the system was also broken. So it's kind of interesting to hear it from a second person just in the last couple of weeks,
That's interesting. I firmly believe that. My daughter just got certified as a yoga instructor. And really, she wants to focus on sort of trauma and healing for women through yoga. I think that's a really valid, it's not an end-all, be-all solution, But I think a holistic approach, nutrition, as you mentioned, some mechanisms to minimize stress and really increase your physical awareness and health in the world probably help a lot. And then I do believe that art, creative endeavors, whether it's writing, you know, visual journaling, whatever it is that works for people, is a huge part of that.
Yeah. I actually, one of the things about art that I kind of think that I've been trying to get a message out to people, which doesn't always work, is that it's not that complicated, because I think people say to me, well, I don't know anything about art, you know, and like, you don't really need to know anything about it. Just look at it.
So hallelujah, sister. That's a big lesson I had. And that's why I felt kind of, you know, I felt embarrassed and dumb about it. I was drawn to creative things, to art and poetry. I remember reading poetry books in this big dusty old library in Ohio, and I would never take them out. I would just put them back. I would read them at the library because I didn't want anyone to think I was too fancy or, you know, whatever. and I also thought, well, I just have a high school education. How can I understand this? And then when I came here, ironically, I do have a college education now, and I realize it's completely irrelevant when it comes to art. You don't need that. And that is a question I get from people a lot, whether it's about the visual stuff that I do or the poetry. People will very often come up to me and say, I've always wanted to do that, but I don't know how to get started. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what a lot of my online presence has been about with Ink and Alchemy, is just start, just do something. Who cares? I mean, it's more about the process truly than the product. And as you continue doing it, you just grow in confidence. And I think people don't understand that you can just do it. And it there's some kind of energy barrier there where people want to do it for decades. And it's so sad to me that they feel trapped and they can't ever start.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that like journaling has become a more popular thing too. I've noticed it. It's being taught more, or maybe that it's probably always around, but now because we have like this kind of communities that are building, that it, the word is getting out. Like, you can do this. This is something that you can try, and this is how you do it. It's like for people who don't know, you know, it's like it's not. You just start somewhere, and I think that was starting is like a huge, huge thing. But I also understand that wanting to hide and not really putting it out there, because even though I have always loved art throughout my whole life, and I tried, I never had very fine motor skills. I'm left-handed. And
me
and,
too.
In a right-handed world. That's always been really challenging for me, that I never really developed those fine motor skills. So to do kind of like very realistic or kind of fine little tiny things, that just is never going to happen for me. So.
Me either. And you know, this is something that I had to come to terms with, and I'm there now. Actually, if I choose what kind of art I want in my home or what really pleases me when I walk into a gallery or something, it's not. And I'm not being dismissive of this kind of art. It's just not what speaks to me. I don't like fine detail scenery and still lives or whatever. I like grungy, weird, abstract, funky stuff.
Yeah.
And when I let myself be free to do that, that's when things really started opening up for me.
Right.
And actually, I've had a revelation in the last, I'd say, month related to Ink and Alchemy that I haven't admitted to anyone yet. So I'll tell you now. I was speaking a message to people that you could be brave and do this art, et cetera, et cetera. And without realizing it, I was focusing Ink and Alchemy on other people's art. That's ostensibly because I wanted to help people promote their art. But I realized what behind that was a fear of putting my own work out there.
Yes.
So by promoting other people's art, I could avoid being very vulnerable while saying to people, sure, go on, put yourself out there. So there was a dichotomy there that didn't make sense. And I don't know if you noticed, but in the last like maybe couple months, I have changed the focus of Ink and Alchemy and forced myself to put my work on there.
Yes, I did notice actually. And I did actually notice, I think it was more than a few months ago when you actually published your other poem, the not bed sheets, the egg salad one, when you published that, I actually, I mean, because I pretty much followed your page for a long, long time, like in the group. And so I didn't remember ever seeing anything like that. And then when you put that out there, I was like, wow, that is awesome. Like, she did it. She put it out there. And she, because honestly, look, I'm sorry, I'm going to cry. I get like so emotional.
Oh, thank you, Amy.
No, because it's beautiful. And because, you know what? I mean, I think a lot of us are terrified to like say what we mean. And, you know, everyone's like, you know, especially women, because it's kind of like these subtle things, you know, oh, you don't, you know, when you're a kid, speak when you're spoken to, or when, if you're a woman, you're kind of like, you're kind of putting yourself second or caring for other people. Right. And then you have all these like thoughts and feelings and things, and then you just keep them to yourself, or maybe share them with a couple of girlfriends or something. But, in general, we are kind of quieter and, you know, less likely to, I think men, have always been bolder. And I think that's why you see a lot more men making success in the art world. Some people say it's sexist. I don't necessarily think that's 100% true. I just don't think that there's as many women actually working in the field too. So we're not going to have representation as much. So
I agree. And even, you know, referencing back to my professional career, you can imagine at a national laboratory that's primarily engineering focused, we have women that are successful there, but the lion's share of all of that belongs to men. Mm-hmm. There are probably, I'm sure, I know there are still some sexist pieces of that. Part of it is simply that in the years past, women didn't go into that field as much. And so it's a numbers game right now.
Right.
So I agree. The Egg Salad poem, that was, I think I put that out during the summer. I was really writing with that team, and they gave me a lot of confidence to really be open with that stuff. And we were doing it in front of big crowds. We were practicing, we were competing. Right. And so I felt a lot more comfortable. But that's a true story. And I had a part of a poem in my little queue for a long time about my ex-husband, the father of my two kids. And then last May, he overdosed on heroin. And I just felt it just kicked that poem into gear. It just allowed me to work through that and finish that. And one of the things I love about that the most is that I realized I just really felt nothing for love for him. I just felt so sad that he had ended up in that situation. And so many people do. They just lose control of their lives, and there's nothing you can do to bring them back.
So, I actually, where I grew up in the New York metro area, I had many, many people that I grew up with have died very young because of heroin. Heroin has really taken a toll. I mean, it's been going on for many, many years now, but now in the U.S. it's even worse, I think. But I think it's spread throughout like the entire country now. I think maybe it was maybe a little more focused in cities before.
Yeah. I think it used to be more inner city kind of, you know, thing. And now I think even a lot of the small towns across the United States are suffering. Thank you for that about the poem. That one's a pretty important one to me. And I kind of phrased it in a funny way because I feel like a lot of my work is very heavy, and I try to find ways to make it not so taxing to myself and the audience, because who wants to listen to that crap? So
we do want to listen to it, but in bite-sized pieces, I think.
Right.
Have you actually ever heard of she's a very young singer. Her name is Aurora. She uses like a moniker. She's amazing. She's very young. She started writing stuff when she was like 10 years old. Crazy. Anyway, her stuff is really kind of dark. Like one of her, it's fascinating to me that she wrote some of it where she couldn't have even have lived this. You know what I mean? It was like a kind of crazy thing. But now she's actually touring around the world, and she basically took her writings and, you know, she sings and she does this thing. But she says in one of her things too, I kind of have to laugh because she says, in this last song, this is the last sad song for the night. she said, I always try to wrap them in some kind of pretty little tune, you know?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Even, is. And I think when you're presenting your poetry, though, when it's like the spoken word, there it is like in, I mean, maybe you don't have music necessarily, but it is like a song in a way to me.
Yeah.
Because you're doing that. Do you find, though, that actually, so I know that you do the journaling and this spoken word poetry, but do you find one more, or is it kind of equal, like as far as healing goes?
I don't think as far as the healing goes, but I will tell you that the art is, there's my cat, the art is easier for me because it's a little more mindless. I'd let myself just kind of throw stuff down on the page and not care what it looks like, which took me a while to understand. So it's a lot more, there's a lot more ease associated with that. Whereas the writing, you really have to find the time and the mental energy. And as you know, you throw some stuff down, go back later, edit it. It takes a while to get to something. So I think they both heal, but I think I tend to do the art more readily and easily.
So you did a workshop, it was part of something called 21 Secrets. So are you planning to do any more workshops then?
I am. I do have a collaborator. She goes by My September Moon. And so we are collaborating together to do some workshops in the future. We're still in that designing phase right now. And so I don't have dates for those, but we're really excited. And it really is around art journaling and healing, just developing good emotional skills and habits and identifying where maybe you don't have those through journaling. So I'm excited about that, and I expect it to be coming maybe in the next 3 to 6 months.
So will they be local, or are you going to do some virtual ones, or?
I think we're going to do both. We'll probably do some small local ones, really to be able to have that in-person communication and really understand some lessons learned, work out the kinks. But ultimately, we're going to do that online and offer those online. So
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
pretty really exciting.
That's exciting.
I didn't actually see a therapist for many, many years, and then I did. And, you know, I think once she said something like, you know, for all this stuff that you had go on, I think you're okay. And she said, and here's why, you're self-medicating. We normally would recommend to people that they do some creative activity maybe to sort of work through that. I mean, we know that. You get kids in therapy and we have them draw and write and everything else. And so I think those of us who are doing this, we are working through it on our own a lot. Mm-hmm. And we're much stronger in the world when you have that inner core for yourself and you're not just thrown around by other things, right? Yeah. I feel stronger because of journaling.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yes, I do. I think without art, I really don't know where I would have ended up, because I did have a period where I was just really falling apart.
Me too.
You know, I think everybody has, you know, the dark night of the soul at some point, but, you know,
right.
But where we end up afterwards, you know, well, hopefully it's in a better place. So.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what that Pinterest saying is, but isn't it something like, we all have adversity, it's how you handle it that counts or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really do just try to focus on the positive, and I know you do as well, not to the point of ignoring what's really going on or not acknowledging the negative, but I think if you have a safe space to kind of work it out, whether it's, you know, any kind of art, journaling, whatever, creative writing, I think that really helps you offload some of that and be able to keep your hand on the reins for the positive and the happiness.
Yeah. And sometimes
some people can't.
Yeah. And I think sometimes too, like maybe I think for anybody who's listening, if they were to do journaling or poetry, there's no requirement that you have to share it with anyone.
No.
I think that's something too, that maybe, I mean, you will decide that you want to and open yourself up to that. And actually I think a lot of people, even, you know, aren't going to necessarily judge it as being anything, because I think a lot of people just kind of respect the fact that you have the courage to take the step and put it out there. Maybe you share it in with just somebody that you know that's close to you, or maybe just even in like a group where you don't even know people, more anonymously. Because I do think at one point though too, you don't really have to share if you're doing it as like a healing thing, but I think at some point when you keep making art, I think it's almost like, I would encourage people to share it, to share poetry or art, because like I find comfort in knowing that I'm not the only person that had these kind of crazy things that happened. Yes. Or that, and just, I think because we have such this kind of like high gloss, you know, all right, so maybe less magazines and more internet, but still Instagram and social media, the whole, you know, this is the kind of recurring theme that has been coming up for me lately, is that we're living in this kind of plastic world. And, you know, that's okay. I mean, sure, of course I want to show my better, you know, side of my face in my profile picture or whatever, or I don't want to look like, you know, I just woke up and I only had 2 hours of sleep or something. But right. I also think like, you know, we're human beings and like this shared human experience is really important. And,
yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And, you know, I actually can look back and almost laugh at the terrible deep fear I felt about sharing my stuff, both visual and written, because it feels so personal, right? It's like you're throwing your heart right out there and letting everyone trample on it. I have to say, I can't recall at this moment any time anyone has said anything really hurtful or negative, whether it's performing in front of groups or online. And even sometimes when we perform, you're at a bar or a brewery and half of the people just came to have a beer. They didn't even come for poetry. Or I also do some comedy. Thank God. That's that beautiful tune on either end. I kind of interweave it in there.
Oh.
But really, I haven't had a lot of negative feedback at all. And so when I look back, I think in a way it's funny and interesting that people are so terrified, because you're right. Most of the time people are just generous of spirit, and just, they think it's brave that you do it. A lot of people wish they could do it and they can't. And they just appreciate that you're being honest and open.
Yeah.
And I think there's something valuable in that. Like you said, you don't have to share, but if you do, taking that extra step, I think it actually somehow locks it in and solidifies it a little more, makes it real.
Yeah.
For me, at least.
So. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because I was trying to figure out a way to express it, because it's something that it's like more tangible, and it's, and you just, because I think hiding, because in a way there, it's a gift to the world, you know, even if only one other person sees it, you know, or 100 people see it, or maybe somebody, I mean, you never know how something is going to impact someone too.
You really don't. Yeah. And it gives people hope, I think. Hope that, you know, if they're going through something difficult, they can make it through. Hope that there are ways to kind of deal with it and work through it. And just that they're not alone. I mean, that's valuable right there. So I think it's good that we do these things. And I for one, am going to keep doing it. You know, whether or not I make money from it is a whole nother story. I actually think I could have done a little bit of a different path and made it a career, but I focused on the other one instead. And so I'm hoping that when I retire, I can, you know, kind of use this as a stepping stone to something that is around healing and transformation. Mm-hmm. So kind of waiting on that with bated breath.
So what is your advice to anyone, or a recommendation or a book or you know, any kind of tip to get them in the direction to use journaling and poetry as a healing modality for the
self? Yeah. So I would say one of the books that I saw early on, and I revisited it recently, is called Spilling Open, and it's by Sabrina Ward Harrison. Very, very vulnerable, open book that really will inspire people to just throw it on the page. Doesn't matter what it looks like. And then I think really just starting is the biggest advice that I could give people. Just get a notebook. I love to use old books from consignment shops. That's usually what I would do my work in, but whatever works, and just kind of start putting something on the page and kind of committing to doing that on a regular basis, whether it's every day, every week. I think you really will, if you give it the chance to develop, you'll see the value of it in your life. And I think, as we know, just connecting online. There are a lot of people that, that do this. One of them is Orly Avenari. Do you know her?
Actually, the name kind of sounds familiar.
She's pretty well known in this journaling community, and she comes through Albuquerque periodically. I had a really neat opportunity to do one of her workshops, and she really focuses on understanding your past, reconciling it with the present, and just, you know, it's a process. It's less about the result and more about your emotional process as you go through it. So her Facebook is really super inspiring. She puts work on there all the time. And I think that's a good one to look at too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for taking the time today for having a conversation with me on Conversations.
So. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me. And I'm glad to kind of meet you, you know, in person, virtually.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Conversations. I really enjoyed it so much. And it was such a privilege to have Robin perform one of her poems for us on the podcast, too. So if you like this podcast, please rate it and review it, because the more that we have ratings and reviews, the more people that will learn about it and can benefit from all of the guests that we have here.
Until next time, take care.